Blue Peter, a day of making and playing the board's game. Join them in redefining political and contextual territories and learn how to fight the oppressors of the spectacular society. Sunday brings the launch of the Class War Games film, The Game of War, directed by Ilza Black and written by Richard Barbrook and Fabian Thompson. For more information about Class War Games and players, visit classwargames.net.
Hello, we're Class War Games.
I'm Fabian Thompson.
I'm Richard Barbrook.
And we have our special guest.
Yes, it's our last show, but our first female guest. It's Ilza Black, the director of the Class War Games film.
And we'll be
talking to we'll be talking to her in a minute. And as you heard from the advert, the big thing for news is, of course, the festival is upon us.
Yes, next weekend, up at HTTP in Haringey.
Yeah, near Manor House Tube. Bit complicated to get to, but there's a very good map on there.
That complicated. It's just right by Finsbury Park, and you walk down the road, and you're there. Really,
exactly. Very good venue. So that's the big thing. Well, the first day, as the advert said, we're going to be making and playing Guy Debord's Game of War. If you've got the book and you didn't know how to play it, come along. We'll show you how to do it.
And if you didn't get the book and don't know how to play it, come along anyway.
And there'll be copies there for sale as well, so you can get hold of your own copy.
Or you can make your own, and they'll have copies of the rules. So, you know, if you're a little bit short on the money front, come along anyway, and you can actually... You see how to make this game for next to nothing out of bric-a-brac.
Exactly.
Yeah, bring your kids as well. Yeah.
And then, obviously, on the Sunday, we're going to do the big film launch.
Exactly.
And 3 o'clock, we're cracking open the champagne to celebrate this great achievement.
Yes. I mean, we've had a little preview of it last week.
And it looks amazing, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean... We wrote the script, so, you know.
But it's the director who brought it to life.
Exactly. And, I mean, that's really interesting when you start off writing something and then you see it transformed by the use of visual images.
And also the strange experience of having something you've written down spoken by someone else, particularly if they're female. It is quite a strange experience. I think, oh, that was what I said.
Yes. Exactly.
So I say this is, you know, our last show, and it's all very sad, but we are going to be back, actually.
Yes. I mean, as we said before, we're heading off on one or two little adventures. And then we're going to do a little Christmas special.
So actually, not little, it's an hour long.
Well, yes.
So it's a top 10 board games for lefties to play over the festive season.
Yes. So it's well worth tuning in if you're like thinking of presents, or you're thinking, well, hang on, we've got a bit of a holiday here. Yeah, people like to play a game, and then perhaps we'll come up with some ideas that you might find interesting.
But in the meantime, between the weekend and... when we're back on Christmas, we're going to a couple of adventures. Me and Ilza are going to Rotterdam to play the Game of War and show her film. I gather you're going off somewhere exciting.
Yeah, I'm off to Lens Politica in Helsinki in November.
That's on the 14th of November. And hopefully I'm going to be up in Newcastle with Alex, who's been interviewed on the show, and we're going to make some link between Baltic to the Baltic. Yeah. So, great. The only thing I must say is on Saturday, I actually met two of our listeners.
Listeners.
Hi.
The Pixley Street listeners, we wanted to say hello to you, and they loved it, so that was even better. So we love them.
Yeah.
But I think now we should go over to questioning Ilza Black.
Yes, and the first question I've got is, how did you become one of the founder members of Class War Games?
Well, thank you for this question. Been bothering me as well. Like, how did I really become? I mean, how anybody becomes part of this situation, this self-organized group. But I guess I first came down and played a game, was in Alex Studios, wasn't it?
It's Alex Vanessa, who we interviewed earlier on in this series.
Aptly named Occupation Studios.
Yes, that's it. And as I know you, Richard, for a very long time, so it's I think it was your own game we played that day, wasn't it, with Guy Debord's rules?
Yes, I had these toy soldiers that I found in the loft that I left there, and I made up a set of Ottoman versus Habsburgs.
Yes.
Yes, I guess, triggered my, desire to join the group, and kind of continue. my situationist self.
So would you regard yourself as a situationist?
I think it's been like over 10 years, you know, since I've been like actually quite into the ideas and supporting the ideas being popularized as much as possible. So partly, yes.
So this is what. So I think really the next thing we have to think is, why were you interested in making a film about Guy Debord's Game of War?
Well, I guess that's a kind of that what I was just saying. I think it's about how you talk about ideas and how you make them more accessible for people. And I think with the Game of War, as we kind of played across a few times, we realized that there is a kind of a lack of understanding of how we can explain what it is about and how much we know about it. And so that's how the whole idea came about, that we should create some kind of visual audio material that could help support the whole project.
That sounds good. How did you adapt Guy Debord's style of filmmaking when you were directing the Class War Games film?
Well, his style, I think I think what we decided to do is like kind of copy his style and do as much as close as possible to his handwriting in Society of Spectacle, not of his films, but we decided to go in color. And so we used the kind of voiceover technique which he uses in his films, and kind of cut and paste of visual imagery. But I guess, you know, the kind of right now there's we live in a YouTube generation, so there's a lot of films, you know, kind of using this technique and Bravo on that. So, but we tried to make some more kind of conceptual piece about, you know, together with it.
So how does it work then, cutting together all these clips that we've collected from all these war movies and political movies and even some romantic movies?
Hours and hours of watching war movies, you know, which I enjoyed very much.
You told me that you made you upset because all those beautiful young men were dying in there.
Yes.
And I said, they're not for real, it's just special effects.
Well, I realized that when I was a child, and I, as you know, I grew up in Soviet Union, we didn't have much on TV those days. I loved war movies, so I watched all of them. I couldn't leave to play in the garden with others because there was war movie on. So I think it sort of like triggered the memory and kind of all the romantic kind of notions about death and love and war times.
So do you think that comes out in the way that the film's being cut?
Well, I hope so. I think, you know, there's definitely a certain chapters of the whole film which, I try to get across those kind of relationships.
So how's it work? How's it structured, the movie, then?
It's the movie's in five chapters because we kind of wanted to... It explains the game, and it looks at five chapters, which are terrain... cavalry, arsenals.
Lines of communication?
Lines of communication, the last one.
Cavalry?
I mentioned that one. Combat, I guess, that's the one. Yeah. And so we kind of wanted to create kind of five independent sequences, and then which can be also screened together in one movie. So it's 25 minutes a total length, but you can also access it in a five kind of shorter chapters.
Yes, isn't it going to be used like in art galleries displaying the game?
Yes, I mean, one of the reasons, as you know, why we kind of started to work on this was that after our first gallery show, and we realized that if we exhibit the board itself alone in an empty gallery, you know, it's a kind of very silent piece and very abstract piece. And I think that kind of film is really helps to bring that abstraction into kind of more realistic kind of world of action and learning, maybe. And so definitely it's, you know, it will have one version which travels around with the board and wherever we perform the game or exhibit the board as a kind of supportive material, but it also will be accessible online for downloads.
So one of the key parts of this film is all this stuff that we shot in St. Petersburg in the State Hermitage Museum. And, you know, as you said, you're a Latvian, you grew up in the Russian Empire, as then was. What was it like using that sort of imagery in the film?
Yes, I am Latvian.
we are.
Like I grew up in the Soviet Union, that's all right. Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, it was great to return to Hermitage, because I remember as, traveling as a child and, you know, so shooting, I mean, shooting, playing and everything, really, being there was quite a touchy experience, I think, all around, you know. and,
you're talking about our encounters with the Russian Tsarist bureaucracy.
Yes, 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 and, you know, supporting... four Englishmen, you know, one of the lost, you know, on the way in Russia. So language helped a lot, of course.
Right. So, finally, right, for all our listeners out there, how can they get to see your film about Guy Debord's Game of War?
Well, as a wonderful lad in the beginning said that, you know, if you're around in London this Sunday, please do come around to HTTP Gallery. That's definitely will be a first a viewing of a film. And afterwards, I mean, it's, as we mentioned already, as Richard mentioned already, we will be showing it in Rotterdam, if you're in Rotterdam, and in Helsinki, if you're in Helsinki, and in...
there is anywhere else that we can
buy. Yes. And also it will be downloadable from our Class War Games website. So look out for that.
Yes, and I mean, I think it's more than likely we'll have other venues as time goes on where we'll be taking this. And also there's a new game we're working on as well. So it's a kind of ongoing project.
Get in touch if you want us to come around and show you a film.
Exactly. And it's we're going to show it like on a continuous loop between 12 o'clock and 5 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. So there's plenty of opportunity to see it.
3 till 5.
You'll be still editing right up to the moment of launch, really.
If you sit in front of it and watch it all that time, you'll probably be able to chant all the words.
Hopefully you'll know how to fight and win against spectacular capitalism.
Well, I think it's, you know, in 25 minutes we have tried, you know, to put in quite a lot, so I think it's definitely something you will need to watch more than once to kind of grasp the meaning of it.
We'll publish the script as well to help. But I think it is this interesting process of, if you write something and then when it's turned into a film, by the way people speak it, I mean that they actually changes the meaning, doesn't it? The way, you know, it's then put to pictures.
Yeah, new dimensions are added. It brings other aspects of it.
As someone who writes something, you're so used to the text, and then but putting it into sound and vision completely changes the way that the
meaning, isn't it? Yes, well, that's the whole meaning of the Debord, isn't it?
He would approve.
Yes, hopefully.
Yes. Okay, well, thank you, Ilse Black, from Class War Games.
Thank you.
So we're as you know, every week we have a sort of review of a game. And this week, as our final week, we're actually going to look at a game which I actually haven't played. It's only you who've actually had a go at play. It's called The Pursuit of Glory. Tell us a bit about what this game is.
Okay, well, one of the things that drew my attention to it is, and we've mentioned it before, we mentioned The Unhappy Charles before,
which we were reviewing last week.
And we mentioned The Triumph of Chaos,
which we reviewed quite a few months ago.
Yeah, which we found a little bit hard to play. And these are basically what are called card-driven games.
CDG.
CDG.
For those aficionados of boardgamegeek.com.
Yes, actually. And also they're also point-to-point games as well. What that means is that you have the locations on the map are like points linked by lines in a network.
Rather than squares or hexes as other board games.
Exactly. So, and in the game we've been working on the Austrian Civil War, we've been using the point-to-point method
without realizing that's what we were doing.
Yes, but now I know the correct terminology
to impress other board game designers.
Absolutely. And we got into using cards, but the method we use is different from something which has really evolved since 1994 when Avalon and Hill brought out We the People, which started this kind of card driven idea. And what happens is you
So what's We the People about then?
This I've never played it. I just did a little bit of research on, mainly on Board Game Geek actually, but then that can take you off to all the different websites relating to a game. But it was a War of the American Revolution.
The American War of Independence, as they call it.
Well, they call it in different things on different days of the week.
Yeah.
But basically, what you have is you have a set of cards, and you have, well, certainly in the later games, you have different decks. So as you go through the time period, some cards get played and removed from play, and other cards become available. And that's how you have them. You have two things. You have a shuffle pack, so you have a randomising element in terms of how soon or how late you get the cards. And then, but you've got the choice of whether you play the cards once you receive them immediately or hang on to them. So you've got that chance and decision.
So it's a combination balanced between a board game and a card game.
Exactly. But the other side of it is that you can use the cards in different ways, depending on how you're playing the game or what you perceive the needs are in the game. So you can play the card as an event. Mm. So in Pursuit of Glory, there's whole...
So what is this Pursuit of Glory? Tell the listener what it's about.
Very good idea, rather than jumping in. It's a First World War game focusing on the Middle East. And basically, you've got a map of Turkey stretching up into the Balkans, stretching up into the Caucasus, stretching across to Persia, stretching down to Egypt. So it focuses on Turkey. And
so this is 1914 to 18, the Central Powers versus the Allies.
That's exactly right.
And this is, I'm sure for our listeners, what that's most famous for is that David Lean film, Lawrence of Arabia.
Well, when you look at the cover of the box, think, is that Peter O'Toole or is that Lawrence of Arabia, if you've seen the film?
Well, the spectacle obviously triumphs the historical reality.
Absolutely. But when you actually look at the reality of it all, that was, a very minor aspect of it all. A lot of the main fighting was going on in North Turkey between Russians.
And also, of course, the other film everyone remembers is Gallipoli with Mel Gibson.
Well, I don't know. I never saw that film.
So can you invade the Dardanelles?
You can invade all the Dardanelles as much as you like.
And so you can also... So it's the Arab revolt, it's the fighting in the Balkans, it's the Dardanelles expedition.
And also it has other aspects which are perhaps less familiar with to people coming from a very Anglo-centric point of view.
Yeah.
So it's got jihad.
So that's very topical.
I mean, some of the propaganda during the First World War was presenting the Kaiser as a Muslim. So there's been all sorts of things going on. And there are circumstances when you can actually have an Indian mutiny happening, mm-hmm. which is something the British were actually quite scared of. They were quite scared of Enver Pasha, one of the Turkish leaders, after he'd been thrown from power in Turkey. He then went to Germany. But Germany was collapsing as well. Then he went to see Lenin in Moscow. And Lenin said, oh, yes, go and start a mutiny in India. He only got halfway there and then started fighting the Soviet Union, which upset the Bolsheviks a little bit.
So this game, is it a two-player game, a multiplayer game?
It's a two-player game. You could separate out the Allies into a Russian and Brits, basically. But you couldn't. You could maybe separate out the Bulgarians as well, but I don't think that would really work.
So the game works where you're moving pieces across the board and you're playing these cards. Now, you mentioned these two games that we've already reviewed. I mean, my memory is of The Triumph of Chaos, where we did try very hard to play this game, but it was, as that thing online said, it's a PhD thesis disguised as a game, and it's incredibly difficult to play.
Well, from my little bit of research about how these games have evolved over the last 15 years...
So they start with this We the People being very reasonably simple, but then they get more baroque, is
it? Exactly. Certainly, I don't know about going back that far, but certainly with... You first of all have Path of Glory, which is the First World War in Western Europe.
Also named after a film.
Yes. Then you have Pursuit of Glory, which is the one that I've just been playing. And then, but with the Triumph of Chaos, it's a bit like Parkinson's Law, you know. Any gaming system gets made more and more complicated till it reaches the point of unplayability. But having said that, what's happened is the previous games built up a certain body of fans of those games who understood all the rules and everything like that and liked the challenge of extra rules. So when they get a game like Triumph of Chaos, they actually know three quarters of the rules already.
So we made the mistake of sort of jumping in at the deepest end of the pools rather than starting with the beginners' games.
Exactly, but I still think there is too much. Though there is an expansion set put out to Triumph of Chaos for the people who find it a little bit too easy. So, you know, I mean, maybe we're just dilettantes. You have to consider that possibility.
Or Euro gamers, as we discovered we are.
Well, yes, I mean, that's another aspect.
I mean, do you think it is like this American style of game where they're so determined to make a realistic simulation that this is partly what we're talking about? I mean, because it seems to me that what was good about Unhappy King Charles was that I still thought that was a bit finicky in parts, but it actually was a good game. That the game was actually designed as a game, and then it was also telling you things about the English Revolution.
I think with that, instead of the rules being made more complicated like in Triumph of Chaos, they were changed and adjusted. Like in that game, you only had one deck of cards, which both people get. Yeah. And what happens is, if you get a card that's beneficial to the other player, you just play it as an operations card. Yeah.
Or recruit somebody or something like that.
Yeah. So what happens is, you're actually preventing the other person from playing it by playing it yourself. So Charles Vasey, who did that game, he seems to have taken it all in a different direction and actually, you know, been quite inventive. Rather than adding on extra stuff to the rules, he's taken it another direction. With Pursuit of Glory, I'm really interested in the period, and I can see how they've used the cards to bring in all the different facets, which are actually, for any understanding of the First World War, are quite important. But in terms of how history is generally perceived, in Britain certainly, these are things which have just been brushed aside, not really treated in any sense. It's got like the British going into Iraq, Mesopotamia as it was then. People are familiar with the Lawrence of Arabia side of things, but the other aspects of the various British manoeuvres in Persia, moving into Baku, moving into the Trans-Caspian Railway and everything like that. These are just on the edge of the game. But these are actually part of Britain's paranoia about basically losing India.
Yeah, but do you think one of the things that these games strikes me is that you have these sets of cards which are supposed to reproduce the history, but we've talked about this with the Unhappy King Charles. The part of the problem is they become too realistic, and if you have something like the English Revolution where basically the king could not win if he didn't seize London very quickly, he actually does very accurately reproduce that, but it means that the game becomes quite similar if you play it again and again and again. And there's this trade-off between making a good game where either side could win and, on the other hand, making something that is historically accurate and teaches you about the period.
Well, there's several ways around that. And one of the things which is happening in the war game fraternity,
and fraternity being an operative word,
is that, you know, the tournament, a tournament approach is developed, and one of the things that happens with you know, in the tournament, the game starts off with people bidding of how many victory points they reckon they can get playing this side or the other side. So really it's a case of saying, okay, in this game you're going to have the Russian Revolution and the Russian army is going to fall apart. That is what's going to happen. It might happen a little bit earlier, it might happen a little bit later. You might be able to delay it. That's going to happen. The Russian side will not win, in quotation marks. But if you look at the whole relationship to the victory points and you say, OK, I'm going to play this game, and it's through the manipulation of victory points that how people succeed in that historic scenario can be assessed in a way that would, you know, where people are playing a tournament.
My other problem is when you have a game like Triumph of Chaos, the part of the problem is I think its analysis of the Russian Revolution is wrong. I mean, it sees the Russian Civil War as whites versus reds, where in a way the whites had no chance of winning the Civil War. The real struggle was inside the Reds between, you know, the Bolsheviks, the Mensheviks and the social revolutionaries of the left and the right. And that seems to be another problem in these games. It's very difficult to then actually take them and pull them apart and then put them together again in a way that's interesting and even accurate.
Yes, and I think that's a very valid point. And if you revised that game, maybe as a multiplayer game, I don't know.
Because they do have, actually, it's interesting in Trivakov, because they have different factions of Bolsheviks. They have anachronistically, actually, at this point, they have Trotskyists and Stalinists and so on, instead of actually having the different factions between the revolutionaries.
Yes, because they lump them all together. In fact, you'd have Bukharin against Trotsky, in reality, the whole Brest-Litovsk and...
Yeah, and I was thinking also, I mean, it's interesting on Happy King Charles, because Charles Vasey stops it at 1645, he can avoid that, really, because you don't actually have the argument between the Presbyterians and the Independents within the parliamentarian side, because you're just interested in the First English Civil War, and it ends at that point, so that works in that game.
Yes.
And you just need some cards to put in to reflect the differences inside both the royalist and the parliamentarian sides.
Yes, and I was just doing some stuff on Wikipedia where they were talking about the machine gun company, and said they were involved in campaigns after the war, right? Mm. And I think something that we have to question is the notion that the First World War ended on the 11th of November 1918. That was an armistice, and really a lot of the Russian Civil War and other combats, the Anglo-Afghanistan War in 1919, you can look at the Irish War of Independence, are actually part of a continuation of the First World War.
And these games can in a way help people know about that.
Yes, and really open up, you know, a side of the First World War which has been segmented, cut off and put away in other little cupboards. But there is, we're coming towards the end of the show, and I know there's something you're really keen to talk about.
A little
trip down memory lane for you.
Oh, I just said, I just wanted to say that the one thing we did review earlier on in this series, Andrew McNeil's Kingmaker, and I did track down these Osborne Battle Game books, because I did mention that I did meet him when we were play testing. And then, thanks to the wonders of Abe Books, I managed to get hold of some.
Yes.
And they are wonderfully 70s in their artwork. And I found it's great because it says, they say Osborne Battle Game books with four realistic battle games and pieces, one of which is called Galactic War and has science fiction.
It has got vegans in it, so it's quite realistic.
Except they're the enemies of the humans and the Lurgi.
Yes.
The Second World War one, which is even funnier, because I actually remember playing a game called Beachhead. My grandfather having landed at Juno Beach in 1944, I can remember this very vividly, having to blame him. So one of the things that we'd like to say, you know, we have talked about various of these games. You can buy them in places like Leisure Games, and you can obviously get them from websites as well. And there are even the old ones like Kingmaker and these battle game books. Lots of them are still available on eBay and in secondhand bookshops and so on.
And actually, I would say that from when I was wargaming as a child, the whole thing is expanded and a lot more accessible.
I know, it's amazing how easy, though you think computers would get rid of analog gaming, actually they've been a great boost to it, at least when they're networked together. Okay, we're coming to the end of the series. Thank you for listening.
Yes, we're going to be back in December for our Christmas show, but until then we're going to have to say
goodbye. And thank you, Ilse, for coming in and talking about the movie. Hopefully we'll see you on Saturday or Sunday.
Thank you, Sarah, for
looking after us.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to miss you guys on a Wednesday.
Oh, we're going to miss you too.
But you'll be back, though, and that's cool. For more information, of course, www.classwargames.net, and be there on Sunday.
Okay, I'll see you then.
See you. After the break, we have got Kitchen Magic Time. Do you think
de Boer, strategist for the Situationist International, developed the game of war whilst in exile after the May 68 revolution. On Saturday the 26th of September, the Class Wargames crew present Marcel Duchamp meets Blue Peter, a day of making and playing de Boer's game. Join them in redefining political and contextual territories and learn how to fight the oppressors of the spectacular society. Sunday brings the launch of the Class Wargames film, The Game of War, directed by Ilse Black and written by Richard Barbrook and Fabian Thompson. For more information about Class Wargames and players, visit classwargames.net.
London Art Book Fair, Whitechapel Gallery, 25th to the 27th of September. Film screenings, talks, music, and books. And it's free. London Art Book Fair, supported by Resonance 104.4 FM.